Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, zip up your leather pants, slap on the clown paint, and don't forget to eat something light as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I forgot what the show was about for a second. Did you hear that?
Yeah, right.
Wait a minute. What are we talking about?
Is this Bigfoot or is this? What is this?
I'm joined, as always, by my buddy Mark Matzke.
Hello there. How's things?
Good. Well, we've been together now for 35, 40 minutes. It's still the same recording session, so if I sound like garbage because my allergies are bad, if I sniffle into the microphone, please forgive my rudeness. I will do my best to cut it out, but
it's allergy season in Ohio.
It is allergy season in Ohio, and I'm just coming off a cold, so it's like the best of both worlds.
Transitioning right into full-blown allergic reaction.
Yeah. The Black Forge Coffee House show, Small Town Monsters.
That's coming up really quick, isn't
it? It's not billed strictly as a Monsteropolis show, but it's a Monsteropolis recording. So that it will be on this very podcast, actually. I think the plan is to record it live, and then you'll be able to listen to it after the fact. But if you want to be there live to see Mark and I record a live episode of Monsteropolis, we'll be at the Black Forge Coffee House in Wadsworth, Ohio, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
The new Black Forge.
Good Lorge. we'll be at the Black Forge Coffee House in Pittsburgh, PA on July 19th, 6 p.m. Tickets $5 to $10. All ages friendly show. There is very limited seating. I'm talking like 30, 40 seats. So if you are wanting to be there,
we'll have to do multiple shows probably, like
I don't know,
five, six consecutive shows.
Honestly, I'd be shocked if 20 people show up. So, but if you do want to hear us, I would try to get there early so you can be assured of a seat. I'm sure we can squeeze people in, you know, have them stand at the
back. Yeah, it's a coffee house.
Yeah. So
nobody's going to be paying attention anyway. They're going to be on their laptops.
You guys are all going to be like sitting there in your beatnik hats with your pipe. playing your guitar and ukulele.
We'll just be in a corner
talking and no one, we're actually not even doing an episode of Monsteropolis. We're just going to be doing some freestyle rap.
Sweet.
And spoken word.
It's a poetry slam.
Yeah, a lot of Monsteropolis poetry slam. The second
Lizard
annual.
Man.
Yeah.
Yellow eyes. Why do you hate me?
Creeping out of the swamp.
Enslave me.
Yeah. Creep back in, piggy.
Digging your gold for you. You mean creature?
You know, at some point, I read a really interesting article on Charles Manson yesterday.
Oh.
Is that kind of story like out of bounds for Monsteropolis?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay, I'd be interested to talk about something like Manson.
By definition, it's...
A monster.
A monster.
Yeah.
Monstrous events.
Yeah. So we're continuing with reptilian monster lizard mania.
Lizard mania.
Lizard mania. Did I miss something?
No. I thought we should perhaps mention the event that's coming up at the end of July, since now we're into July just about. It's a event taking place at the Johnson Humrick House Museum in
Coshocton,
Ohio.
Yeah.
And I am super excited about this because it's going to give the opportunity for Seth and myself and whoever is present to take a look at the holy stones that we talked about on a previous episode when we talked about earth mounds and things.
Yeah. Ancient architecture, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So that day is, there's going to be a screening of On the Trail of Bigfoot.
Yep.
Is that
the entire series? So all six episodes, it's an extensive, how long is the event? It's like
11 to 3.
Yeah. It's a long event. We're going to show all three or all six episodes of On the Trail of Bigfoot. And then we're going to do a Q&A with me, you, I guess Andy, if Andy's there, Adam Dugan, who's a part of the series, should be there. I think his plan is to be up in Ohio for that event.
Nice.
And I don't know how much, does that say ticket price?
Yeah, it's got all the info here. It's, again, July 27th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Cost is $10, including lunch, or $5 for the film only. You have to register by July 24th, which you can do by emailing jhmuseum@jhmuseum.org or by phone 740-622-8710.
Yeah, this is going to be a really cool event, and it's actually right down the road from where we filmed the Harrison House sequences for Momo. So if you're in Ohio or the surrounding area, or you just want to come spend a day, I know the Ohio Night Stalkers, who were featured in the series, are going to be there, and there's some other Bigfoot groups that are going to be set up. There's going to be vendors. I probably should have mentioned that. It's almost like a mini conference. Centered around On the Trail of Bigfoot. So definitely come hang out. There's going to be, there's going to be a vendor's room and all kinds of stuff going on. So the $5 to $10 is pretty good. $10 with lunch or without lunch. $5. Can't beat that. Watch six episodes of On the Trail of Bigfoot.
Now, you know, we returned from Monster Bash. We didn't mention that on the previous episode, but I had a lengthy conversation with Stan Gordon while there, and he brought it up again to me. How much he thinks of that series.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Bigfoot. He really.
He told me he thinks it's the best done on the subject. And I'm not blowing our own horn. I'm not tooting our own horn.
No, it's really pretty stunning to have him say something like that. So,
date again for that is July 27th.
Correct.
So, definitely come hang out with us there or in Pittsburgh or both, because they're completely different types of events. One is Monsteropolis and one is Small Town Monsters related. But this is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters, and we are on most podcatchers. And you can send us mail to monsteropolismail@gmail.com. We read all the mail we have last week. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And eventually we'll get an Instagram going. So we talked last episode about the reptilian conspiracy theories, and we hinted at some of the origins for those conspiracy theories and where they might have started. I did a search earlier for, I think, just lizard people. And the first thing that came up was a story from 1934. And I thought that was really weird. So I clicked on the story and I went down this rabbit hole of what I believe to be a really fascinating string of articles that ran starting in 1933 all the way into 1934, but are still written about today. And these ran all over the country, but they originated with the Los Angeles Times, and then they would get rerun in other states around the country. But there's an article from 1933 that ran in the Los Angeles Times. And this isn't the first of these articles. I don't have these exactly in order, but the article is titled "Catacombs Under City Declared Gold Filled." Catacombs under Los Angeles and gold in them there hills, or in that there hill to be more specific. This is the gist of a report to Supervisor Shaw's office by Rex Irving McCreary and G. Warren Shufelt, who together with Roy Martin were engaged in seeking buried treasure beneath the rounded surface of Old Fort Moore Hill, back of the Hall of Justice. The hunt for old Spanish doubloons and bullion was launched after Shufelt, owner of a radio device, with which he asserts he can locate gold deposits, made a preliminary survey of the hill some months ago. Martin possesses an old Spanish map, which also indicates the eminence is the hiding place of forgotten treasure. And on the strength of Shufelt's findings and Martin's chart, a contract was entered into with the county, giving the men permission to seek gold. The county was to collect 50% royalty on anything they found. The contract has expired and the search ceased, at least temporarily, without the three treasure seekers or the county being any other richer, except in experience as the result of a month's digging. But the erstwhile gold diggers are not to be discouraged. In positioning the Board of Supervisors for an extension of their contract, Shufelt stated he has completed a very thorough survey of the hill with his radio contraption and has arrived at the following conclusion. Fortmore Hill hides a labyrinth of tunnels with a total length of 1,900 feet and rooms embracing 9,000 square feet of floor space. There are at least 16 places where gold is buried or concealed in vaults. The board will consider extending the contract today. Again, this is all Los Angeles, so this is all taking place in Los Angeles. The next article is also from 1933, I believe. Yeah, 1933. And this is actually from the Cincinnati Herald, I believe. But Los Angeles, March 26th. With mingled doubt and concern, the County Board of Supervisors heard today that there are catacombs under the Hall of Justice and that at least 16 sites in the 1,900-foot labyrinth of tunnels contain ancient Spanish doubloons and gold bullion buried or concealed in vaults. It goes on to say that they were allowed to begin searching these vaults for gold. So I'm going to try to figure out what comes next here. Let's just go with this one. Old buried city being hunted in Los Angeles. This is now into 1934, January 29th. And I promise this is going somewhere. If you stick with me on this, the article is titled Old Buried City Being Hunted in Los Angeles. Okay. Indian legend and a radio X-ray have started a group of men digging in the heart of Los Angeles for a lost underground city of the lizard people. The shaft, now down 250 feet, the explorers believe, will lead to the key room of the city of catacombs in which were stored the city records, which legend says were written on tablets of gold. G. Warren Shufelt, geophysical mining engineer and designer of the X-ray, and other associates dug 50 feet on county property in the same area not long ago looking for gold, supposed to have been buried by Spaniards. The county denied them a permit to dig further, but Shufelt continued exploration with his device, which led him hither and yon over an area from the public library to the Southwest Museum. I knew I was over a pattern of tunnels, he declared today, and had mapped out their course, the position of a large room, and the location of deposits of gold, but I couldn't understand the meaning of it. He was taken to Little Chief Greenleaf, an educated Hopi Indian from Arizona who sometimes lectures under the English name of L. Macklin. Shufelt said Macklin told him he apparently had located one of three lost cities on the Pacific coast dug by the lizard people about 5,000 years ago after a great tongue of fire had come out of the southwest, destroying all life in its path. They dug the labyrinths to escape future fires, and one of the cities lay within a chain of hills forming the frog of the horse's hoof. The description fits, said Shufelt, and he interested other persons in financing the shaft, which is being dug on North Hill Street within a few blocks of the city hall. The legend, as told by Macklin, said the lost city was dug with powerful chemicals. The tunnels began at the ocean. The tide, passing daily in and out of the lower portals, forced air into the upper tunnels, providing ventilation. Large room in the domes of hills housed hundreds of families who stored imperishable herbs as a food supply against the coming of another fire. The lizard people, who were reputed to be highly intellectual and have developed a cement better than any now in use, regarded the lizard as the symbol of long life. So this is actually referring to them as just people who are called lizard people, I guess. They laid their city out in the shape of one, its tail to the southwest. The legendary story must remain speculative, said Shufelt, until proved by excavation, but we are prepared to go down 1,000 feet before we will abandon our operations. So now there is a article that comes after this that gets really in depth that I am just going to straight up post on our on our Facebook, the Monsteropolis Facebook page. It includes sort of the map or the blueprint for the entire city. And it is supposedly, it's sort of in the shape of a lizard, actually, fittingly. And there's also photos of the lizard people, which do resemble lizards. So it's not just people that worship lizards, unless those are masks. They're said to resemble lizards. But I did want to mention, this is not a fake story. I found an article from, I believe, Kingman, which I think is Colorado, from 4 years prior to this, about the same miner, this G. Warren Shufelt, who was at the time a report of ore finds on the Serbat mining claims has been made here by G. Warren Shufelt, who has taken over the property. Shufelt said that the exhumation of the main vein of the group disclosed ore that runs from 1 to 7 ounces of gold, besides considerable lead and good values in silver. So G. Warren himself is a legitimate person. Like, this isn't necessarily a made-up story or a faux story or fake story like we find very often. He was real. He was pretty much stating that he believed that there was a this city was there, and that his x-ray device, which is a little strange, had discovered gold in this spot. I did want to read one small section of this article, which is also 1934, titled "Did Strange People Live Under Site of Los Angeles 5,000 Years Ago? An Amazing Labyrinth of Underground Passages and Caverns Hundreds of Feet Below the Surface of Fort Moore Hill is Revealed in Maps, All Rights to Which Have Been Reserved, Prepared by G. Warren Shufelt, Local Mining Engineer, who explains his topographical endeavors as being based on results obtained from a radio x-ray perfected by him. In this elaborate system of tunnels and rooms, according to a legend furnished Shufelt by an Indian authority, a tribe of human beings called the Lizard People lived 5,000 years ago. The network of tunnels formed what Indians call the Lost Lizard City, according to Shufelt and the legend. It goes on to talk about the lost gold tablets that have been hidden in the city. And this takes, like, Los Angeles Times by storm. Like, this is, like, their main story that they're really covering at the time. And this goes all through 1933 and 1934. I found an article that was written in 2014, or no, this is 1996, actually, that ran in the LA Times. And it just talks about how...
So it's a follow-up?
Yeah. It basically runs over what we already talked about. Shufelt never made it clear whether the lizard people were said to have reptilian or human features, but the book Mysterious California recounts a 1972 incident of a San Jose man hiking on Mount Shasta, who swore he saw a reptilian humanoid in shirt and trousers walking along the slopes. On Shufelt's return from Arizona, he began mapping and plotting to find this golden underground world. He theorized that the greatest trove of all was a key room under Times Mirror Square, housing a map to 37 golden tablets, which each 4 feet long and 14 inches wide, which chronicled the race's history. Talks more about his x-ray machine. However, the legendary story must remain speculative until unearthed by excavation. He soon had his chance. After one last survey with his radio x-ray, Shufelt believed he had found a treasure room on Fort Moore Hill, where the Los Angeles Unified School District headquarters is now. The hill had already captured treasure hunters' imaginations. Spaniards reportedly buried their riches there in the mid-19th century when the Americans took over. But a year before Shufelt's excavation, gold diggers who attacked the hill with shovels and had nothing to show for it but sweat. The city gave Shufelt permission to drill down to 1,000 feet, but after reaching only 350 feet, drilling stopped for fear of a cave-in. Breathless newspaper accounts were never followed up, and Shufelt disappeared. But he wasn't the only one who believed that an ancient city lay beneath Los Angeles. 5 weeks before Shufelt started digging, Edith Eldon Robinson of Pico Rivera had a vision that was later recounted by the American Society of Psychical Research. She envisioned a vast city in mammoth tunnels extending to the seashore. The tunnels had been constructed by a vanished race to protect themselves, she said, and to provide access to the sea. A Hopi expert says the Hopis did have a tribal social division known as the Lizard Clan. However, Chapman University professor Paul Apodaca finds Shufelt's version of the history to be exaggerated and corrupted. Still, it's too bad no gold was found on Fort Moore Hill. These days, the school district could use all the gold it could get. that there's more to this, obviously, but for the most part, it's a story that was never solved. It's a mystery that was never solved. The digging just stopped for some reason, even though he was allowed to go to 1,000 feet. He only went to 300.
Yeah, I guess my contribution. I would like to know more about Shufeldt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it says in that last, the follow-up.
What actually says he's disappeared. The inventor of the X-ray, which I don't think is true. I'm pretty sure that was someone else.
Yeah.
Is that Edison or like one of those? Wasn't that one of those?
Well, I don't know. I guess I'd have to.
Yeah, never say yeah to something I'm saying because you think I know what I'm talking about because I don't. But I'd like to know more about this story just in general and how much this story has played into sort of the conspiratorial angle of like reptilians and lizard people.
Yeah,
because I'm sure it's been embraced to some extent. I found an article from the 1970s about, and it was from a Midwestern newspaper, and it called Los Angeles the city of psychopathic angels, and it went through all the things that they perceive as being whacked out, like crazy things that are originating in Los Angeles. It talked about the Manson family, but it also talked about a cult that had built up around the idea that there was a lost city full of gold that was overseen by lizard people beneath Los Angeles. So I'm assuming that that originated with this Shufeldt story and just kind of took on a life of its own, which in itself is pretty cool. Like, I'd like to know if that is a thing. Like, I've never really heard about that being a cult or a conspiracy theory, but I do know that Ike and others have stated that Mount Shasta and Los Angeles are sort of the hubs of lizard people. Like, there's a lost city, not a lost city, but it would, supposedly they just live there. So
like a big base of operations.
Base of operations, yeah.
Yeah, and it does, the Los Angeles story, there's many points of connection that are there. You have the underground race, you have the gold connection, and the Native American connection. So from a wide angle perspective, you can see how one may have led to another. That the cult thing is something that deserves some more attention, I think, on our part as well, because that's that's part of our fascination with anomalies, and that would certainly count as one.
Yeah. So you had other sort of sightings of lizard people that may have escaped the lost city under Los Angeles. Maybe that's where they're all coming from.
It went north in this case to British Columbia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is one of the fairly famous, you know, within the microcosm that is cryptozoology. But this is the Thetis Lake Monster, and it's... The thing that's cool about this is that there's sort of an early stage to the story and a later stage where you have some confessions going on. So it's pretty cool. It's a good story. It's a reptilian creature that was spotted in 1972 near Thetis Lake, which is located outside of Victoria, British Columbia. On August 17th, 72, it was reported by the Victoria Daily Times that 16-year-old Robert Fluellen and 17-year-old Gordon Pike went to the Canadian Royal Mounted Police claiming they saw a spontaneous swelling of water and were chased by a terrifying monster. The RCMP launched a manhunt for this creature, saying of the two boys, "The boys seem sincere, and until we determine otherwise, we have no alternative but to continue our investigation." Fluellen and Pike described the creature that chased them as looking something like the Gill Man from the 1954 movie The Creature from the Black Lagoon. They said it was roughly triangular in shape, 5 feet tall, and 5 feet across the base. They also claimed to have been attacked, as one had been slashed across the hand with the creature's three webbed fingers, which it had in addition to its three webbed toes and barbed fins on its skull, arms, and legs. 4 days after the initial sighting, 14-year-old Russell Van Nice and 12-year-old Mike Gold claimed to see the same creature on the other side of the lake from the original sighting. The boys said of their encounter, "It came out of the water and looked around. Then it went back into the water. Then we ran. Its body was silver and shaped like an ordinary body, like a human being body, but it had a monster face, and it was all scaly with a point sticking out of its head and great big ears and horrifying eyes." Here is a artist's rendition of said creature, which
kind of creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
Esque.
It is.
Small, pudgy version.
The Canadian Royal Mounted Police eventually closed their investigation of the fetus-like monster when a man called in and claimed his pet tegu lizard had escaped a year prior. It was officially assumed that this was responsible for the sightings, despite this explanation not making sense for a number of reasons. The tegu lizard can't survive a Canadian winter. In addition, the lizard's size only grows to 4 feet, and its characteristics don't match the descriptions given of the fetus-like monster. Recently, Daniel Loxton, an editor for Junior Skeptic magazine, tracked down Russell Van Nice. Van Nice admitted that he and Gold had made up their story for attention, adding that Gold was famous for being a habitual liar. Loxton also noticed the coincidence that a week before the original report, a local TV station had broadcast the movie Monster from the Surf, otherwise known as Beach Girls and the Monster, which featured a creature similar to the one reported as the Thetis Lake Monster. Loxton also stated that the only reason the story of the Thetis Lake Monster had endured, despite this debunking, is because, quote-unquote, cryptozoologists don't do their homework. However, Flewellen and Pike have not come forward to say the same. Because Van Nuys and Gold were the second pair of witnesses, it can't be outright said that the Thetis Lake Monster has been debunked, based only on Van Nuys's word. Even prominent cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman has noted that the confession Loxton received from Van Nuys should not be accepted as the ultimate truth of the Thetis-like monster being a hoax, saying that, and I quote, "There is usually someone around who wants to tell whomever will listen that such and such an event was a hoax to get their 15 minutes of fame. It especially should not be outright assumed that the Thetis Lake Monster is a hoax because a sighting has been reported as happening as recently as 2006. A man named Jesse Martin claimed in a post dated November 1st, 2011, that as he was leaving the lake, he saw a man running towards him who lunged at his passenger's side door and hit the handle of the door as he pulled away. Martin said of the aftermath of this encounter, "When I got back to the place I was staying in Duncan, I pulled into the driveway and was about to go inside when I decided to look at the spot on my car where the man had struck it. As I walked towards it, I stared dumbfounded at what I saw, 5 scratch marks with patches of fish scales strewn throughout." Lauren Coleman asked Martin what he thought about debunkers who dismissed his claims. He responded, "My response to the debunkers is simple. It's easy to deny the existence of something if it doesn't fit into our concept of what is real and what isn't. It's difficult to come forward and admit you've actually had an encounter with an unknown creature, knowing you're in a position to be attacked."
I have one from Henderson, Nevada, that occurred in 1977 to 2 kids, Mark Hinkle and a friend, and this was reported on ufodigest.com. The 2 kids were hiking. They hiked maybe scant 1 mile across the desert and climbed the little hills in front of Black Mountain. They found they found a cave. They squirmed inside the cave somehow, and they found several large branches that someone had dragged a couple large branches about a mile from the closest tree and tossed the branches into the hole, creating a makeshift ladder to climb down into the lower pit. The pit was roomy with a short annex. Occasional debris littered the rocky floor, like a tin can or two. A battered teen magazine perched on a small outcrop of rocks that served as a shelf. The boys explored to the main cave, then turned their attention to the short tunnel or annex and heard the sounds of voices and maybe the distant humming of machines. Intrigued by the thought of mining nearby, the boys went deeper into the tunnel. They find some more strange stuff. They hear voices. The boys became frightened by the strange vocalizations and hightailed it to their makeshift ladder, headed up toward the cave entrance on the upper level. As they exited, they heard what sounded like the metal door opening, its old metal screeching. They crawled out the tunnel opening and ran away from the cave entrance. Thinking they were safe, they breathed a sigh of relief. Without a warning, they heard a loud, threatening growl. Harry and Mark looked back at the cave entrance, and to their horrified eyes, they watched as a very large, greenish humanoid struggled to force his big body out of the narrow cave. The boys screamed and started running down the slope of the hill at top speed. They didn't look back until they were near my backyard. They told her about the incident and produced a strange metal rod that they had found in the cave. The rod was approximately 1.5 inches across, maybe a foot long, with a slight indentation at one end and a plain gray cap on the other. I looked at the bizarre symbols engraved in a 3-inch section of the rod. It was just symbols from spiral circles of different sizes, a few triangles, and a few unknown symbols. There were no levers or buttons, and the cap at the end didn't seem to move. The rod with its professionally created symbols... and smooth to the touch, I knew it was not a toy, but nothing I recognized. There's more to the story. That later that night, actually, the boy claimed that he was awoken in the middle of the night by someone trying to get into his bedroom window. His mother hoped it was just a nightmare or his nerves were still on edge. Quietly, he slipped into his bedroom, listened to the sounds of scraping at the window edge. He was not mistaken. In the light of the moon, I could make out the silhouette and shoulders of a man. I was alone with 4 kids, no husband to protect us, so I grabbed my flashlight, suddenly tossed the curtains open to face the man. There was a glare from the flashlight on the window, but past glare that I could see a large head with ridges on the top, the other ridges on his cheekbones, and the glow of golden eyes. Mark and I stood still, unmoving, but fear and shock kept us frozen. The lizard man didn't move, either his hands still poised in his attempt to pry the window open. His hands were large and webbed, rough, gnarly-looking fingers with powerful claws. After a couple minutes, not seconds, but long agonizing minutes with our hearts pounding, I knew I had to do something, one hand still holding the flashlight beam on his face and my eyes still locked into his golden eyes. I fumbled around in the dark with my other hand, hoping to find something to use as a weapon. He glanced at my hand, looked back into my eyes. He turned his head a little as if he were asking a questioning. He slightly opened his lifeless lips, displaying 4 of his pointed teeth, and suddenly he turned and ran off into the desert. Stalked.
That's about as close range as you could get.
Stalked by the lizard man.
Wow.
I pulled this from ourstrangeplanet.com, but that story came from ufologist.com and seems to have been posted by the actual woman. That's her recounting of what happened in 1977 with her son. Kind of a cool story.
Yeah, very cool.
There's more. There was a recent sighting that was on CryptoZoo News, actually, or CryptoZoologyNews.com, not CryptoZoo News, but CryptoZoology News, that was in, I believe, like Tucson or something like that.
Hmm.
Tucson, by a businessman in February of 2014, claimed to encounter a lizard man in the desert. So the sightings are ongoing. Do you have one you want to hit before we wrap
up? Sure. It's a couple of them real fast from the Ohio River Valley.
Nice.
These are taken from Lauren Coleman's Curious Encounters.
Actually, Ohio or?
Ohio River Valley. So these would be Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And he was looking in back issues of the Louisville Courier Journal. In the October 24th, 1878 issue, a wild man of the woods is captured, supposedly in Tennessee, and then placed on exhibit in Louisville. The creature was described as being 6 feet 5 inches tall, having eyes twice the normal size, and this is the point of relevance for this particular study. His body was covered with fish scales, and again, that's 1878. So, the Gill Man evidently was caught and captured and displayed in Louisville in the late 1800s. And then almost 100 years later, again near Louisville, there are more stories of reptilian entities. In October 1975, near Milton, Kentucky, Clarence Gable reported a giant lizard was roaming the forest near his automobile junkyard. Author Peter Gutilla described the creature Cable surprised as about 15 feet long, had a foot-long forked tongue and big eyes that bulged something like a frog's. It was dull white with black and white stripes across its body with quarter-sized speckles over it. On-site field investigations by Mark A. Hall, however, indicated this giant lizard ran bipedally, according to other Trimble County, Kentucky witnesses. The Ohio River is Louisville, Milton's, and Trimble County's northern boundary.
We have more from that sort of general area anyway in the next episode, as well as talking about the... we've been asked to do an episode about the lizard man for a while, so we're going to get into the Scapegoat Swamp and the Loveland Frog in the next episode. If you enjoy the show, you should leave us a rating and review on iTunes, and you can send mail to monsteropolismail@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, and come see us live at the Black Forge Coffee House on July 19th, 6 p.m. Get there early. Thanks for listening.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.